You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And we say hello to you on a Friday afternoon. So great to have you on board. The weekend has arrived, and so has the college football season for the SEC. And that's where we begin on a long-awaited Friday afternoon. Yep, SEC is back. Better than ever. 3 weeks late, but who cares? Tomorrow morning it begins, and Ed Orgeron and the LSU Tigers, the defending champion, but the first games are Florida and Ole Miss and Kentucky and Auburn, and we'll talk about both of them early in the show. 3:30 game is State at LSU, Georgia and Arkansas in the middle of the afternoon, Alabama and Missouri, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt and A&M. The nightcap. Is that enough for you? I think it is. Enough for all of us as we can't wait for tomorrow. Meanwhile, the NCAA's committee to consider waiving record requirement for bowls. That means you put on a uniform, you're probably going to a bowl game. It's the new world in 2020. Mountain West is coming back. Welcome back. Seems like everybody who left is on their way back. And they will start in October and play an 8-game season. And you see this headline in Saturday Down South. It has been replicated across college football. Greg Sankey is at the epicenter of college football, many giving him credit for saving the game with his deliverance. And he will talk to us about that later in the program. And we have a guest list pretty typical of a Friday afternoon. We will zigzag around the SEC. Who better to start than Joe Tess on the call for Florida Ole Miss, one of the early games. Taylor Davis will be on the sidelines for Vandy and Texas A&M. We will talk to her coming up here in a minute. Jordan Rogers on Kentucky and Auburn. That is a really good one. Jake Weiss from the Auburn Plainsman. Matt Hayes, outstanding college football columnist. Todd Blackledge in Columbia, Mizzou for the nightcap tomorrow night. Alyssa Lang in Columbia, South Carolina, the commissioner we mentioned. And Tara Talmadge in Fayetteville for the battle between former assistant at Georgia and the current head coach at Georgia. So that's how we shape up on this Friday afternoon. We are going to be busy. I think that would be an understatement. So we would encourage you to give us a ring now at 855-242-7285. A lot of things that we'll be talking about. And we begin with Jerry up first. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Hello. With all this craziness going on in the world, it occurred to me today that Greg Sankey might be the person that is the most influential person in the country in terms of how this election might turn out, theoretically, with the swing states being in the Midwest, SEC proceeding forward with football, forcing the Big Ten to do the same. And I was curious if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that what the commissioner did helped set the template for the rest of college football. In terms of the election, if it turns on college football, then we're all in good shape. What we do is that important. I have no idea, but I certainly appreciate your thoughts. Really nice of you to call. Let's check in with Zach, who is in Gainesville, Florida. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Zach. Hey, Paul. What's going on? I just want to say something. I wasn't able to get on September 11th. I just want to give my condolences to the 9/11 victims and families. But I just want to say that first. But, Paul, what do you think about the Gators this year? And I think they're going to roll over Ole Miss pretty easy. So I don't think there's much to talk about that. But what do you think about the Florida Gators having cowbells at the home games to make up for the lack of fans and those horns they used in the South American soccer tournaments?
Yeah, you know, I think Florida is heading toward a really, really big year. Tomorrow is the first step, and I think Dan Mullen really likes what they have. And the question now becomes, can they beat Georgia? Let's check out Daryl, who with the answer. Daryl, can Florida beat Georgia?
And the answer is no. You know what I mean? I mean, three in a row. I heard you building up the quarterback, you know. It's not like he's the best in the SEC. He's always the best in the SEC, Paul. You see, he plays Georgia. We're going to beat them three. It's going to be three in a row. We're going to run the table. We're going to beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa again, okay? We're going to run the table. We're going to spank Arkansas. We're going to spank Auburn, Tennessee. Just line them up. It doesn't matter. We got, 8 out of 10 or 11 our starters returning back on defense. We're going to be loaded. We got a new quarterback. We got a new offensive philosophy. And we're going straight to the top. I think we're going to run the table and go undefeated. Paul, I heard you were crying about LSU being on 60 Minutes. Because it wasn't Alabama, is that right?
That is not right, no.
That's why I heard your little heart was breaking, because it wasn't Alabama. Let me ask you this. Who do you think? I mean, of course, Alabama's a pick in the West, but I don't see LSU really being as good as they're probably everybody thinks they're going to be. Outside of LSU, who do you think can contend with Alabama in the West this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think LSU and – LSU, Auburn, and A&M are really in that next group, and I think LSU is probably the most dangerous of that group, of the secondary group.
What about A&M? Well, you said A&M. What about Mississippi State?
What about them?
Well, I mean, they got a new coach, right? I mean, that guy's good.
Well, they do. I mean, I think Mississippi State is going to offensively going to be very good. I mean, I think they're explosive, but I'm. You know, when this Mississippi State has a defense that can shut everyone down, then I'll buy in. But until then, I'll probably be a little bit reluctant to pick them to finish too high. Red Dog is up next.
It was good to hear, Daryl. And, you know, we keep saying Florida is going to be good, but I don't know if they've been playing video games. It hadn't happened yet. But I've got a ballad today, Paul, for the Arkansas game. All right? So it's Eve of the Dogs kickoff, and I bleed red and black. And guess what, Paul? I smell bacon.
You know, I think it's time to ban all ditties and songs from the show. Do I hear a second? I think I do. Motion passes. How about Doug in South Carolina? Hello, Doug.
Hey, Paul. I want to know one thing. Are you Vols ready to dismantle them Gamecocks?
I don't know about that. I think they're ready to play. What about you?
I hope so. Because Clemson's my team, and the only other team I pull for is your alma mater. So I hope they don't let me down. I hope, since Clemson can't wear them out, I hope the Tennessee Vols can wear them out tomorrow. And another thing, that call a while ago, he must be dreaming if he thinks that Georgia is going to beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We are, man, we're just doing the all-star list of callers today, aren't we? Red Dog, Daryl. Anyway, what we're going to do now is take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We have a lot to do on the program, and I mentioned so many important guests, including Joe Tessitore. He's up next.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Put a little cherry on the top.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And SEC football final tomorrow night after the games. The recap of everything that transpired on day one of the SEC football. Speaking of day one, someone who will be doing one of the first games on ESPN is our next guest. He is Joe Tessitore and comes to us courtesy of the region's guest line. And he's somewhere in Mississippi. I'm sure the best restaurants have already been had or will be had. But Joe Tessitore, great to have you back on the program.
It's nice to be visiting with you on a Friday when we know we're going to be broadcasting SEC football, which makes me think that you probably had a little hop in your jog step this morning, because this just feels better, doesn't it, Paul?
It does. And listen, I've watched all the games, as I know you have, but I mean, the full slate of SEC ball, I think, will keep us occupied from morning till late night. And Joe, let's talk about where you are. And it is the debut of Lane Kiffin.
It is. And I just finished up a meeting with Coach Kiffin. And I think that he's obviously excited for this challenge at hand. I think he understands some of the realities of recent recruiting here with this program and how much work still needs to be done, which is, by the way, a very big challenge in the midst of COVID, and something that's not talked about enough, that the spring recruiting period went away, the ability to have the hands-on evaluation during summer camps went away, and now players cannot take visits to campuses. So when you're trying to get things headed in the right direction, it's a little more of an uphill battle. But there is good offensive talent still in this Ole Miss program, and then you take an offensive genius like Lane Kiffin. And I think because of that and his play calling and knowing now Jeff Lebby comes over here, the offensive coordinator who comes from UCF where they like to go fast, I think there's enough intrigue with what they can be offensively to make every game interesting.
Joe, let's start at the quarterback position, because he has two interesting choices. I sense he'll use both, but how will that be done?
I think Corral's going to be mostly the guy, but there's no way you can leave Plumlee off the field. He's just too elite of an athlete. He has too much speed and dynamic playmaking ability. Listen, who knows? Maybe we see both of them on the field at the same time, Paul. But clearly, you know, they've got speed. And in Corral, you also have significant arm talent. You have a guy that Lane Kiffin told me just about an hour ago. He said, listen, he can drop back to the opposite hash, go 70 yards across the field the other way. He has elite arm talent. And then knowing, you know, who's in the backfield with Ely and what he has in the slot with Moore, I think there's a lot of confidence that they'll be able to move the ball down the field, and we will see both guys.
He has a really interesting defense, especially with Durkin coming over here as a former coach at Maryland. What do you sense and hear from him, and what is this defensive unit going to look like? Because it needs to be good.
Well, I would trust DJ Durkin as much as any defensive coordinator. Then, of course, you and I know him from his past, both as a coordinator and a head coach, and he's back in the SEC now. But I think in terms of developing players and scheming it up, he's as good as there is in the SEC. The problem is that it's been a side of the ball that's been under-recruited. And they're going to have some new impact players defensively who really need to step up, especially in the defensive backfield, and coming off the edge and creating pressure. But that's where the talent gap is in this game, Paul, because the Florida offense with Trask at quarterback, with a matchup nightmare and Pitts at tight end, with speed and size on the edge at receiver, and now health and depth in the running back position and a good offensive line, they're going to give Ole Miss's defense fits.
Joe, we were talking before you came on about getting ready to talk to Dan Mullen, and just, you know, I had to do a double take for a second, but Dan Mullen coming into Oxford, Mississippi from someplace other than Starkville, I know it's so weird to think about, because he's such a popular man in Oxford, Mississippi from his day.
Oh,
to Starkville.
Sure.
Let's talk about Dan and what you already alluded to his team. I mean, he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, he's got a lot of talent, and here in year three, he has high expectations, and we know there's one circle of the date, and that is Georgia. and getting over that hump. It's interesting. You probably saw it today, but I read that column on ESPN.com where the Football Power Index ran many simulations of the SEC season ahead. And the one, of course, that they featured is the one that has Dan Mullen's defense dominating, Trask being the most veteran and productive quarterback in the SEC, getting a win against Georgia, finding a way to get an upset in the SEC championship against Bama, going in to the four and dominating in the semifinal, and then beating Texas, I believe, is who the simulator came up with, for the national championship. So as if there isn't enough buzz, enough hype, and enough added pressure, now you got this column that comes out that says FPI thinks that Florida has a way to win the national championship. Listen, I think the talent is there, and I think we always forget that as much as we read these preseason magazines from June and through the whole summer, and then we make these assumptions as to what a team is, there's always the great reveal. And because these are young men who have the ability to take major jumps forward, as we saw last year with a certain quarterback at LSU, you just don't know who's going to take that big step forward. But there's enough combination of veteran elite talent on this Florida roster and young developing talent to say that if that gap gets filled, yes, it can be Florida celebrating an SEC championship. It can be Florida as a legitimate national championship contender. But when you start a season like this, where you didn't have the soft non-conference game, where you got to shake off the rust of dealing with COVID, who was there, who wasn't there during training camp, and you're on the road against a conference opponent and a tricky new staff with the offensive trickery of Lane Kiffin, you got to get through week one. And that's what we get to find out at noon tomorrow on ESPN.
Let me broaden it just for a second before you go, Joe. And since we were here last yesterday, the Pac-12 has now rejoined college football. And there's so many questions today about, you know, their limited schedule. You know, will it be enough? You know that league very well. You know the coaches. You know the talent, which is missing. I mean, do they have enough games and firepower to compete with everyone else in the eyes of this committee many, many weeks from now?
Well, they're not going to have the larger sample size for us to make a better evaluation, correct? And they would not have taken on as many challenges. But when it comes down to any time we answer this question about who should be the four, it's who's the best. And if we look at a certain team in the Pac-12, and we clearly all decide they're the best, they're one of the best four, then they're one of the best four. I just think it's going to be very, very challenging for that to be proven this year. But we will see. Plus, they're not leaving themselves much wiggle room, Paul, are they?
No, I mean, they have really left themselves minus wiggle room. But anyway, I'm glad they're back. I know you are somebody who does college football all over the country. Joe, before you go, we got such a tremendous reaction last week from you being on this show. I don't know where you go week to week, but I hope you'll continue to come back. It has really energized your many, many fans in this part of the country.
Well, you're very sweet to say that, and you're very generous to offer an invitation to join you. And I promise you that whenever I can on a Friday, I'll try to always fit it in between my coaches' meetings, because there is nothing I enjoy more. And I miss those days when we were on the road of those Friday afternoons and those dinners we would have of the buzz and the anticipation before an SEC Saturday, and just being able to talk through all the plot twists and scenarios and predictions with you, my dear friend. So thank you for that invitation. I will take you up on that.
And one last thing, just over your shoulder, I consider myself an art connoisseur. That is a Rembrandt and a Van Gogh,
believe,
right behind you?
Yes, I believe this is a Leroy Neiman from 1974. No, I'm not sure if it's Monet. I do believe it could be Jackson Pollock or perhaps a fresh impressionist, yeah. But it is something special, isn't it? Would you look at that?
It could be William Faulkner, since he used to hang around that town.
It could be. It looks more like Wright Thompson after a night out.
Yeah, it does. Joe, great to have you back. We will hopefully talk to you again very, very soon.
All right. We will see you for the return of the SEC noon on ESPN right here at the Grove. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
You got it. Joe Tessitore. Always great to have him on, and we will take a break. So many more guests to come. We'll zip around the SEC at a fast and record pace. Stick around, your phone calls as well, as we roll on here on a Friday.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back to the program. The comeback is Lane Kiffin. He's back in the SEC. And as you heard Joe Test say a minute ago, he's got everything's fired up. It is really, this is the most demand games. The Missouri ticket is a little more pricey, probably from Alabama folks driving up. Arkansas folks want to see, but you know, we'll see those numbers go up in weeks ahead, I can assure you. Let's get back to the calls, and David is up next in Florida. Hello, David. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Coach. My mom, always a pleasure. I feel like Christmas was postponed, but at last it's Christmas Eve, and I, for one, am just delighted, as all your callers are, too, I believe. Sports fans love to speculate and engage in hypotheticals. It's pointless, but seems to be fun and part of the DNA of being a fan. But and with that in mind, I'd like to throw out a speculative question to you. And as your boy Danny Sheridan likes to say from time to time, if you had a free $1,000 bet, which side would you put on the proposition? And the proposition is this: is it more likely that four different conferences will be represented in the playoffs, or that the SEC will have two teams?
Yeah, I would go for the four, and I think the Big Ten really was the problem. I don't think the Pac-12 is going to really matter very much, but I think adding the Big Ten makes it more problematic. I still think it's possible, but yeah, and I think the best scenario is really Florida and Alabama, because if you know Georgia gets canceled out somewhere in there by that game against Alabama. If you had, let's say you had an undefeated Florida team run the table, meaning that they would have beaten LSU, beaten Georgia, and then lose to Alabama in a one-point game-ending field goal. I mean, are you going to keep them out with that type of resume?
Right,
and
right.
Versus, and that's where it becomes more difficult. Other than that, I think because of the truncated schedule, if you lose a game, you're going to be in trouble. I know, but Sheridan said the other day he thought people would lose more than one. That would help, but right now I would bet against the SEC having two.
If you would, I'd like to praise you, as many of your callers do in their own way, to praise you and your style. That you walk an unbelievably fine line and do what I consider a near miraculous job of being only the slightest, if even that much, judgmental to your callers, even if what they're saying is complete nonsense and you agree or disagree. But such as that gentleman from Tennessee yesterday who, again, was whining about Nick Saban marching with his players, and he's throwing out Marxism and racism and killing police and attributing all this other nonsense to the movement. Paul, I think your show is Marxist in many ways, and that you treat every caller with respect and dignity and let them have their say, even if you don't agree. We're all equals on the Feinbaum show. And just as an educational, perhaps, tidbit here, I'd like to read something from, this is from the Black Lives Matter website, things that what they believe. And number one is something called restorative justice. We are committed to collectively, lovingly, and courageously working vigorously for freedom and justice for Black people and, by extension, all people. Somebody has a problem with that. I don't. That's their problem, not anybody else's.
David, thank you. Thank you very much. And we will talk soon, I hope. Let's stay in Florida, and Rob is up next. Hey, Rob, you're on the air. Rob, you there?
Yes.
Please. Oh, well, good. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yeah, doing good, Mr. Paul. Hey, I got two questions. The first is, what's your take on the Florida Gators being a contender in the SEC championship game? And the second question is, what is your expectations for Kyle Trask this year?
Yeah, I think Kyle Trask is one of the most interesting players in the SEC. I think he really helps give Florida a good chance at getting there. I'll try to avoid saying this every week until November, but I do think it comes down to that one game. I think based on what I saw from the media, it's essentially a toss-up, maybe a slight edge to Florida. But you know, this weekend and the next weekend, especially with Georgia and Auburn playing, I think you'll start to identify what these teams are really all about. Thank you very much for the call. Let's continue. Aaron is in Mooresville, North Carolina. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Good. Wanted to say, long-time listener, first-time caller, being an Auburn fan, I'm very excited about Kayla Newton, Cam's brother, being on the team this year.
Oh, yeah.
Wanted to know your thoughts if you think he's going to be able to contribute any this year at wide receiver, if they're going to use him at other positions potentially. Could he be a returner? And also just wanted to drop by with the thought, in my opinion, that in the discussion of the greatest running backs in the history of the SEC, Bo Jackson has to be number one.
You know, Aaron, let me tell you a quick story before I get to your question. About 3 or 4 years ago, we were sitting in Auburn, and Bo Jackson was on the set with us. And I think they played a tape of me on another show saying that Herschel Walker was the greatest running back in SEC history. And Bo literally took out his belt and it was like chasing me around. It was a little bit, we were having fun. I mean, then when we finally all sat down, he said, you know, I could break you in half with two fingers. And I was not doubting that he did. He did not like me saying that, but that's something that I've always maintained, as much as it hurts me to make Bo Jackson number two in anything. But it is a great debate, I'll tell you that. They're the best two I've ever seen.
Absolutely. They're both great, and I appreciate chatting with you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's one of those conversations that will never be determined. They both did things individually unlike any other. I did see them play, twice against each other in 81 and 82, and they were both epic games, to have the two of the greatest players in college football history on the field at the same time. Let's check in with Fred, who is in Arkansas. Hey, Fred, you're on the air.
Yes, Paul, I'm calling from Batesville, Arkansas, home of Charlie Strong.
Oh, wow.
I would like to tell you that I really believe Arkansas is going to win four games this year, don't you?
No, I don't.
Well, you want me to tell you the four we're going to win?
Yes, I do. I'm eagerly anticipating
the two Mississippi schools, Missouri and Tennessee. And we really like
Fred. What makes you think you're going to beat Tennessee?
Because we play them in Fayetteville.
Okay.
Also, we love our new coach. We're finally excited after the Big Ten fiasco coach we had, and then Chad Morris, But we're excited about Coach Pittman. He thinks he's going to make us look respectable anyway.
Well, I hope you're right. I am a huge fan of Sam Pittman, and if he can win four games, he would get a lot of consideration for to be the first 4-6 coach to ever win SEC Coach of the Year. We're heading to a break. A lot to do on the program, and we're going to be flipping around a lot, so we'll weave the callers in between guests, but we are jam-packed. And we're heading to College Station next. Don't you dare go anywhere, because Taylor Davis is on deck.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Put a little cherry on the top.
And we welcome you back, and we want to head to College Station, where the Aggies start year three under Jimbo Fisher. And Taylor Davis out there, part of the game crew. Taylor, thank you for making time. I know Aggie fans are fired up. They're favored pretty heavily against Vanderbilt. Let's start talking about Jimbo Fisher and his side of the ball. This is a big year for them. They're expecting a lot. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me. Yeah, you're right. And the general consensus around Aggieland is just a lot of confidence. And honestly, given what we know so far, they're probably justified in it. I mean, we've talked so much this offseason, just given how unconventional everything has been. The teams that are likely to have success this year are the ones with minimal change, continuity of coaching staff, key leaders returning, and systems that they're comfortable in. And Texas A&M checks all of those boxes. And of course, the key leader returning is quarterback Kellen Mond, who told me he feels like he's playing his best football right now. He said his mental approach has improved. He's more comfortable in the pocket, and he feels the deep ball is going to be a threat this year. Now, there are two key opt-outs for this A&M team. One is leading receiver Jamon Osmond. The other, second leading tackler Anthony Hines. So big holes to fill, Paul, but Jimbo Fisher feels he has the athletes to do it.
Yeah, and those opt-outs, Taylor, have really confused a lot of people. I know that it's been talked about, but it's a little bit perplexing, is it not? And I'm curious what you've heard in relation to why.
It's a great question, and unfortunately it's an aspect to the season that every head coach is having to deal with. And you know, I think a lot of people look to the Anthony Hines departure with confusion because it was done a little bit later than you would prefer one of your star defensive players to opt out. But for all of these guys, they're having to make a very tough personal decision, and Jimbo Fisher and his staff have known that this was going to be a possibility of the season, and he says that they've been preparing appropriately, getting equal reps among whether you're a one guy or a four, you're getting equal reps in practice, knowing that this year it's going to be next man up.
Taylor, there's so many elements to going to a game at Kyle Field, and I know covering a game, but it is with COVID, everything has changed. But I'm curious. I know the audience is as well. Just what you've picked up, and I realized without the midnight yell and the scene tomorrow, it will be different. What are you sensing being on the ground there?
It will be different. College football is different. The 12th man is a little depleted this year, Paul, but they'll be there as much as they can. Kyle Field, which of course is huge and can hold a ton of people, it will be at 25% capacity. So it will be loud, and it'll be something that'll give the fans adrenaline as best they can. The band is also going to be here in full effect. So as much as we can make an appropriate game day here in Aggieland, I get the sense they're going to make it loud.
And let me go to the other side, because if there has been a really curious team in the lead up to the season, it is Vanderbilt. They've lost a lot of players as well. They weren't projected to finish very well in the first place. In getting ready for this game and speaking to people on that side, what are you learning and what is the outlook?
Well, Paul, everything that I said about Texas A&M at the beginning, Vanderbilt's basically the complete opposite end of the spectrum, right? I mean, they're bringing in two new coordinators in Ted Roof and Todd Fitch, both trying to install new systems. They've been doing it over Zoom the past few months. There's been a four-way battle at quarterback between two JUCO guys and two true freshmen. The offensive line has had to completely shift because of opt-outs. And, of course, they lost their big three, Keyshawn Vaughn, Kalijah Lipscomb, and Jarrad Pinkney to the NFL. So in typical Derek Mason fashion, they're going to hang their hat on the defense. Majority of their defensive starters are returning. They feel like schematically they can cause some problems for Kellen Mond, but like every season, Paul, and now you add in conference-only schedule, it's going to be a tough task for the Doors.
Taylor, just from your own perspective as a reporter on the game crew, what's it been like getting ready, and what have you experienced this year, and what can and can't you do tomorrow night?
Paul, it's weird. Let's be honest. This football season is weird, and it's making my job a little bit more difficult. Obviously, those person-to-person connections and the in-person meetings, we're unable to do all of that. Our announcing crew are actually going to be in three different cities this week. I'm the only one that's actually here on site. But we're meeting with the coaches through Zoom. We're talking to players on the phone, getting as much information ahead of time as we can so that once we're out there on the sideline, you know, we're doing the necessary precautions to keep everyone safe and comfortable and just, you know, bring the fans at home the game, because it comes down to what happens between the lines.
In terms, I mean, I realize a reporter is, you know, there are no rules theoretically. I know there really are, but I mean, you follow the story, but tomorrow night, what are the restrictions? I mean, how far can you go?
So obviously the team boxes have been expanded on the sidelines. So the area in which I can stand is a little bit more restricted. And then, of course, halftime and post-game interviews, I'm positioned about 10 feet away from the coaches. They have their own mic. I have mine. Different camera angles. The little nuances of how we typically do things is going to be different. So I have to tread lightly. I want to do my job effectively, but, of course, want to make sure that everybody's comfortable with me being out there.
And I realize when you're on the sideline, it probably doesn't matter where your crew is. But, I mean, you do play a role for them because you're letting – I mean, I would think maybe it's more important when they're in the press box, at least they can see what's going on. But you are now their eyes and ears on the ground, so to speak, are you not?
I like to think so, Paul. I hope I'll be the key piece to this crew. I mean, it's disappointing to not have them here. Andre Ware and Mike Morgan are going to be on the call with me, and to not have them here, you know, even if the stadium is at zero capacity, 25%, there's something to be said about being here and being able to soak in the atmosphere and the environment and see the dynamic pregame and on the sidelines. There really is a lot that does for you as a broadcaster. So, yes, it's absolutely my job to be the eyes and the ears, not just for the fans this year, but for my crew as well. So hope to do my job well.
Yeah, and for those who don't follow broadcasting, like those of us in broadcasting, and these crews are like families on the road usually, and that's a big help to be around. Hey, thanks for coming by. We really appreciate it. We will be watching, and hope you have a great evening tomorrow in Aggieland.
Thank you so much, Paul. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Taylor. Great to have her on. Let's take a break here. We're not going to stop. Many more guests to come as we work our way through the SEC. We'll also continue to include your phone calls. Later in the program, I mentioned the commissioner of the SEC. Jordan Rogers will join us next. He's got a big one as well.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.